What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Keep or Cut podcast. We have hit another milestone. It is episode 80, the Jerry Rice episode. I don't know if there are any famous number 80s in baseball, Chad. I'm probably embarrassingly forgetting somebody, but that's a high number.
It is, but I thought we were on 79. So
I'm not sure we're actually here.
I don't know.
I'm pulling up the Omni page now, and oh, it looks like you're right. It's episode 70. So we are not at the milestone.
Jerry Rice has to wait another week.
Yeah, Jerry Rice is going to have to wait, and whoever the heck number 79 is, you know, mad props to you. This is your episode. But anyway.
79 like I said, is a weird one, right? I mean, especially I'm pulling up that baseball reference page. Oh, there is a famous 79, and I should have known this because he plays in a division and torments my Guardians. That's Jose Abreu.
Oh,
Jose Abreu is number 79. So that's a legit number 79. There was a 79 on, that's interesting. He's listed as 79 in the Red Sox last year, but not this year. That's Cutter Crawford. So I don't know if he changed numbers.
Well, he looked a little bit better this year. He was kind of on and off.
If he did change numbers, it was a good decision.
Yeah, stay away from 79. So we'll call it the Jose Abreu episode.
Yeah.
Give us a follow. By the way, going to hit you early with this at Keep or Cut, because we're going to be churning out all sorts of good content during the offseason. The offseason is where it's at for the Keep or Cut podcast. Follow Chad at Chad Young. He has a ton of great content coming out, specifically something that he's going to talk a lot more about in this episode, because that's what this episode is about, is Otnu arbitration. So be on the lookout for that article from Chad. You can, again, follow him at Chad Young. And you can follow me at Pete B Baseball if you want, like, one tweet a week complaining about the Celtics or something, then, you know, by all means, give me a follow.
but who doesn't need one tweet a week complaining about the Celtics? That's a,
yeah, the 3-0 Celtics without that tweet. Like the front runner for MVP right now. Yeah, just come and see me complain about that. Anyway, we're here on October 23rd. Bryce Harper just sent the Phillies to the World Series.
Yeah.
It's looking like it's probably, you know, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx anything, but hopefully the Astros go into the World Series as well. And in the fantasy world, if you play Otnu, it is now arbitration season. So, Chad, before we jump into arbitration, any thoughts on the MLB playoffs so far?
Yeah, the Harper home run, and just, you know, I mean, look, I live in Seattle. I'm a Mariners ticket holder, and I'm a Guardians fan, so I have lots of other thoughts. But I was just thinking about, like, you know, we see teams go out and sign these star players, and there's always this, like, this is the guy who's going to put us over the top. He's going to make the difference, blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm not sure I can remember an example of a team going out and signing a guy like that, making him the centerpiece of their, like, this is the future for our organization. And then he comes up with a hit like that in that kind of moment. Like, that is just an awesome, awesome thing. And yeah, I don't know. At the end of the day, I want the National League to win the World Series. I don't care which team. I don't care who they're facing. And I didn't care which NL team it was by the time we got to the ALCS and the NLCS. The Astros, you got all the baggage that comes with the Astros and the Yankees. Honestly, like, there's things about this Yankees team. Like, I don't have the Red Sox history that you do, right? So I'm not naturally as anti-Yankee as maybe you are. And like, I like Stanton. I like Judge. There's guys that seem like Nestor Cortez is super fun, but they have spent the last 2 weeks whining and complaining about how bad their luck is and how nothing's going their way and all this stuff. And it's just like, just shut up and play the games. Like Aaron Boone being like, oh, I really think having the roof open, really, that really hurt us.
Aww.
It's like, dude, you're seriously a home run to right field didn't get out of your over your like 400 or you're like 300 foot fence, and all of a sudden, you know, the roof in Houston is a problem. It's like, come on, dude, just, you know, at least go out there and like own it, right? Like, hey, we've played terribly for these three games, because that's really what's happened. They've just been bad, and that's okay. But like, I don't know, you're like Luis Severino out there talking about how, like, asked about Bregman's home run, and he's like, oh, it only went 91 miles per hour, and Judge hit his like 102 or whatever. And it's like, what? Who cares? Like, Bregman turned on a ball and planted in the seats. And yeah, the Crawford boxes are an easy target. Don't throw a pitch out over the plate to a guy who can turn on it and hit it 91 miles per hour for a home run. like avoid that. So anyways, that's it's not really relevant to what we're talking about today, but I just like that kind of like whining and complaining. It's like,
oh,
just go out there and play better, man. Play better.
Yeah. I mean, because honestly, you know, you hit it with like, this was like a kind of likable Yankees team. I mean, even for me as a Red Sox fan, we were well out of it. I was, you know, we're in dead last place since, I don't know what, early August. And like Judge was fun to root for. And, you know, like you said, Nestor Cortez, kind of interesting. I actually kind of think that Gerrit Cole has gotten such a bum rap in New York that I kind of wanted to see him succeed just to overcome that. But you're right. It's this whining and complaining, and it's from the top down. Let's not forget
that
Brian Cashman was asked about, you know, why they haven't won a World Series in however long. And he said something along the lines of, and I don't want to misquote him, so this is not a quote, but something along the lines of basically like, well, the Astros cheated in 2017 and we could have won that year. Like, dude, enough.
Right.
Like, give me a break. Anyway, we don't need to turn this.
What about all the other years? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. When you have this massive payroll and it's pathetic. It's just so many excuses.
And I think if you add to that, like, Yankees fans have now on multiple occasions been booing Aaron Judge in the postseason. And it's like,
that's just come on.
But it's just so ridiculous. It's like, this guy just put up like the best season any offensive player has put up for that franchise in like 100 years. Right. It's like there was Babe Ruth and then there was Judge, and like everything in between wasn't quite as good. And they're like, oh, I don't know, struck out twice in a playoff game. All the rest echoes out the window. And I don't know. Oh, yeah. I've been sort of impartial to his free agency because, like, as a Cleveland fan, you know, I can tell you one team that's not going to sign him, and that's my team. But now I want him to leave. I just want him to go somewhere else. I don't even care where. Just go sign with someone else. And, you know, they're booing you after that season. They don't deserve you. Move on, Aaron. You're better than that.
They absolutely do not. And not to lay it on too thick, but because I saw this on Twitter in a lot of spots, a lot of the big follower Yankee fan accounts have all of a sudden started kind of on the low pushing this. Gee, I really wish DJ LeMahieu and Andrew Benintendi were healthy. This would have been a totally different series. Look, I think our dedicated listeners know there's not a bigger fan of DJ LeMahieu than myself. And
yeah,
I respect what Benintendi brings to the table. But those two players are not changing anything in the series. The Astros have been far and away the better team. And let's not act like the Astros are not also missing Michael Brantley, who's arguably just as good of a bat as those two guys.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So anyway, that was fun. I'm glad we were able to do that. Anytime we want to bash the Yankees for 10 minutes, it's fine with me. But let's jump into arbitration chat. And for our newcomers to OtNew, I know there are a few of them in our listener league. Break it down for them. What's arbitration? Why do they have to sign into their accounts here in late October, early November and do something?
So arbitration, we'll get into like there's two versions of arbitration. We'll get into that in a minute. But like at the basic level, the idea of arbitration in OtNew is that it is a system and a method for creating more balance and parity in the league. Right. And so, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners like have played traditional dynasty leagues where there are no prices and you keep everyone and blah, blah, blah. And like, what are the challenges with leagues like that? And I play in leagues like that. I like leagues like that. I'm not saying anything negative about them. But one of the challenges with leagues like that is you get these teams that become dynasties. It's a dynasty format. Teams become dynasties, and it makes it really hard for people to stick around because sometimes it's just, you know, teams become overwhelmingly good. What the arbitration process does in OtNew is it's one of the ways that balance is created in the leagues, and salaries do that in some way too. But arbitration is basically a way for some of the best value players on a team to get knocked down a bit. And if you think about arbitration in Major League Baseball, right? Like players come up, they make the league minimum for a little while, and then all of a sudden team still controls them, right? Like, yeah, this guy stays with the organization he's with. He's not a free agent. He can't go somewhere else. But you can't just pay him the league minimum. You have to come to some sort of middle ground agreement on what that player is worth. And the players get paid a little bit more, and the team, you know, team gets the benefit of keeping him, but still has to pay. So replicating that, not or new, there are two forms of arbitration. Well, and I think we'll start quickly with the one that is less common, which is vote-offs. And the way vote-offs work is every team in the league has the ability to put a vote, one vote, on one player per every other team in the league. So, you know, you as a manager, you have 11 votes, one per team for each of your other managers. Each of the other managers in your league gets one vote on your team. The player on each team that gets the most votes becomes effectively a restricted free agent. So they're booted off your roster, but if you buy them back at auction in the spring, you get a $5 discount. Right. So if you think about, again, comparing that to like typical arbitration in MLB, you know, that player getting voted off your team, just like a player entering arbitration for Major League Baseball, does not suddenly get their full market value. Right. You can keep them for less than their full market value. And I don't know, it's $5 in $5 less than whatever their market value would be. In Major League Baseball, it's whatever the teams agree to. Right. So that's one system. That's actually the original system. So the original Auto New League, we use that. And I've talked in the past about my CBS league that's not Auto New. That league, we actually use something like this. It's a $4 discount instead of $5, and two players get voted off instead of one. And in that league, you also can protect two players. You can like franchise two guys before the voting happens. It's a whole thing. But there is a similar process, and I really like it. I think it's a great way to boost up the pool at the auction. It makes sure that there's more players available, like, but it also gives teams a little bit of a discount. So that's one form. The other form of arbitration, which is more popular, is the allocation process. This is the one we're using in our Keeper Cut Listener League. And in that one, every team gets a $25 budget to distribute on the rest of the league. And the way that $25 budget works is you have to put it, you take at least $1 per team and up to $3 per team. And you basically increase the salary of players on other teams in the league. So just as an example, I can go look at Pete's team right now in League 1372, our Keeper Cut Listener League. And if I wanted to, I could be like, huh, he's got a $13 Tanner Houck. I know how Pete feels about Tanner Houck, and I think that Tanner Houck should be more expensive than that. And I could put up to $3 on him and increase his salary. And instead of $13, if I put $1 on him, he becomes $14.
Please put all of your arbitration dollars on Tanner Houck. Please, everyone.
Yeah, maybe not a great example, but that is definitely not who I'll be assigning that to. But the idea is you can go through and increase salary on guys, and how you do that and who you put it on, stuff like, there's all sorts of fun strategic questions about that. We'll get more into that, but that's the basics of it. Is basically from October 15th through November 15th, you got 30 days to go in and assign those dollars. I think the one sort of additional note I'll make on those allocations is you have to allocate, again, it's at least $1 per team. You have to put $1 on every other team. You can put up to $3. You can spread that out among multiple players. So if a team has three players you want to put $1 each on, you can do that. But you have to do all $25. Because if you don't, then it doesn't stick. So if you assign $20 and you're like, I'll come back later and do the other five. Or if you do 10 teams and you're like, I'll come back later and do the 11th, and you never get back to it, then none of your allocations are official. They all go away. And the reason for that is basically that, like, the idea here is to keep things balanced, right? You don't want a situation where everyone's like, okay, guys, if we all put our $3 on Pete's team and nobody puts it on anyone else, then Pete will be screwed and we'll all be in great shape. So in order to balance that, it's like you have to do the full process or else it doesn't count. So don't forget to put all $25 out there.
That makes a lot of sense. I love that rundown. And something you brought up at the beginning of that, Chad, and I'm bringing this up because I'm thinking of my friends in particular and my brother who just started playing Ought New, and people who might hear like, all right, well, you know, I came out ahead. I got the super cheap Julio Rodriguez, or I got the super cheap Corbin Carroll, and now you're telling me I'm not even going to reap the benefits because they're going to get slammed in arbitration? Well, no, that's not what I'm saying at all, because I don't think that your Julio Rodriguez after arbitration is going to still be market value for like what he actually should be, right? Like you might have a, let's say a $6 Julio Rodriguez, and by the end of arbitration, he's now an $18 Julio Rodriguez. Yeah, it's a bummer, but wouldn't you still happily pay $18 for that player? And so this isn't like, you know, not rewarding you for drafting well, or I should say having a solid auction, but rather it's trying to keep things balanced. And we've all been in those dynasty leagues before. I'm in two of them that I can think of that are just like, there are those two rosters, one or two rosters that are so far and away the heavy favorite. And it's nothing, you know, against those managers. Nice job. You did great. But like, what do we do from here? Like, this is just going to be your team forever. There's not a lot of balance. And I like how arbitration kind of keeps that in check.
And I think it's similar to how it works in major leagues, right? Like it's a longer time horizon in the majors than it is in Ottawa, but I think that's to be expected. But like the Mariners, they got a choice to make sometime soon, right? They've got to either extend Julio or he's going to hit arbitration in a couple of years. And if he does what he's been doing and hits arbitration after, boy, it'll probably be not after, it won't be after next season, it'll be after the 2024 season, right?
He actually did sign a monster contract.
Oh, that's right. Yet. That's right. He signed the extension. Yeah.
But okay. It still holds
so up. They had to make a decision.
Use any player.
They had to make that choice. Yeah. And that's the thing. They had to make a decision. Do we find a way to extend him and get some certainty here? Or do we run the risk that like he gets a $17 million award in his first year of arbitration and all of a sudden is making a ton more than what he, you know, I can't remember what the details are in his contract, but like the reason they signed those deals is because arbitration is coming and will drive up prices quickly. And that doesn't mean the fact that they were sort of not forced into, but incented to sign him to a deal like that. That doesn't mean they don't like reap the benefits of having signed him and developed him and all of that. They do. They have him, and he's still going to be below market value for at least the next few years before the big years in that contract kick in. But they just, you know, he gets some of that money too, right? They don't get to just sit on him forever without him seeing any of it. And that's effectively the balance that's getting in here too.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And, you know, just to compare one more time to major league teams, I think this is something we see the Braves do, not to go too far down the road with this. You know, like the Braves, Spencer Strider contract, you look at it at first and it's like, oh man, the Braves have done it again. But really all they're doing is buying out his arbitration years. They've made a decision, which is ultimately what Ottawa is trying to force us to do here. So let's start breaking down some specific situations, Chad, particularly questions from listeners and providing some advice in general. I'm going to start with myself because this is now like really my second time going through the arbitration process. I did it last year, and going into this arbitration process, I feel a lot more equipped. I know I had a lot of questions for you last time. I'm sure folks could dig up that episode and they're going to hear a lot of the same stuff that we're going to talk about today, different names, but sort of the same gist of advice. And my friend Chris, who I manage a roster with in the pitcher list Ottawa League, I've kind of given him the reins of that team and just said, you know, have at it. And I let him know that arbitration was picking up. And he said, do you have any advice? And I guess the one thing that stood out for me from last year, Chad, was not targeting players to like get a manager to drop them, not targeting players who might be a drop. Like guys who are like, well, I really like this player. I think he's going to outperform this contract. Maybe I can make it uncomfortable for this manager to roster them. And instead targeting those guys who, you know, that manager is going to keep no matter what, because the contract is so low, and making them pay. Because, you know, we had Mark McElroy on last year, and something he said was making sure those dollars stick. You don't want your dollars to not stick. Has anything in the last year, Chad, kind of changed your mind with that? Any of the stuff that you saw last year, is this still kind of the prevailing thought?
That is still definitely my philosophy. And I absolutely believe that, like, you know, if I put, again, using J-Rod as an example, right? If someone in one of my leagues has a $10 J-Rod and I put money on J-Rod, there's a good chance that like 2026, those dollars are still hitting their roster. And then the guys I hit in 20, you know, the guys I hit next year get more money on them. And then next year, more money. And that money starts to multiply, and it makes it more challenging for that manager to build a roster, because I'm, you know, they're not only getting their roster, their budget is now not only absorbing all the dollars they spent, but all the dollars that I and everyone else have assigned to them. And it makes things harder for them. And at the end of the day, like, you know, it's a competition, right? Like, that's how you compete with people, is you make things harder for them and easier for yourself. So that said, I do know there are managers out there who think that it makes sense in some cases to push a guy into cut territory. And the issue I have with that is, well, one is like, you pushing them into cuts that somebody else might be able to roster them, or like, it just doesn't necessarily just do you any good, right? Unless you're the one who happens to buy them. But even if you're the one who happens to buy them, there's a good chance you're overpaying for them. Like, it just, you could have bought somebody else. Like, I don't know. That's sort of the smaller thing. The bigger issue to me, the thing that really stands out and concerns me, is you have no way of knowing if you did anything, right? So I'll give you an example. And you mentioned that I've got this article coming out. I'm working on an article. It's actually probably going to be two articles because it's getting giant, where I'm using the arbitration data from League One, the original Auto New League from last year, and looking at, okay, how did this play out moving forward? And there were four players who received arbitration who were cut before the deadline. Now, one of those was $1 was put on Buster Posey. And that was just a manager who, like, in the first half of arbitration last year, Posey looked like a great arbitration target, right? He had that huge bounce back. He was relatively inexpensive because he had been down before that. And then in the middle of the arbitration process, he retired. And I think this manager just put a dollar on him and never went back and fixed it. Like, fine, that happens. Four of those dollars, there was $4 put on Kevin Biggio in that league that pushed him up to $14. And that's a 4x4, so, you know, OBP, it makes sense. Like, he got cut and then got bought back at auction for a dollar. Right? And so, like, the biggest thing that tells me is that means the person who had him at $10 originally was not going to bid. Like, they weren't even willing to bid $2, let alone $10. Like, Biggio was getting cut, which means that those people who put those $4 on Biggio, they could have put them on anybody else. And it would have, like, things would have played out the same, basically. Four different managers did it.
$4 on Kevin Biggio last year?
The other two guys who got hit, there were $2 put on Randy Arozarena. He was at 16, got pushed to 18. He was then cut, and then the manager who cut him at 18 bought him back for 19 at the auction. And this is a case where I think you could somewhat unequivocally say those allocations worked, right? They pushed him to $18. The manager was obviously willing to have kept, like, the fact that the manager cut at 18 and then bought back at 19 tells me that had he been 16, he would have kept him at 16. And then instead, he ended up spending 19. But at the end of the day, like, that, what really happened there was not, okay, we pushed him and made it uncomfortable, and so we cut him. Like, the manager just made a mistake. They cut a guy at 18 that he should have kept. And the same thing happened with the fourth guy. The fourth guy was Mookie Betts. There was a $47 Mookie Betts. $2 got put on him, pushed him to 49. He got cut, and then he got one at auction for 54. Now, in this case, he got one at auction for 54 by one of the teams that allocated to him. And so I think you could make a case that that manager, like, they put a dollar on him, it pushed his price up, he got cut, and then that manager got to roster him without having to make a trade. I can see the argument there. But again, there's a couple of challenges here. One is, the manager cut them at 49. He might have cut him at 47. I have no idea. I have no way of knowing that. The other is, the real issue here isn't that they pushed him and made him too expensive to keep. It's that the manager who cut him made a mistake, right? He was a $50+ player that he cut at 49. There would have been a trade market for him at 49. There were, like, that manager just didn't think through it, or didn't have the right situation, or it was, and, you know, and if they were in a situation where they were like, oh, I wish I could keep him, but he's just too expensive, I needed to clear $50 of cap somehow, he would have been a cut at 47 also. And so that's my biggest issue, is, like, I look at those and there are, you know, 5, 7, 9 total dollars assigned to four different players that got cut. And at most, one of those dollars was effective. everything else was just people making mistakes. And it, so it's like, nah, I don't know. I don't love the idea of allocating in a way that it's like, I'll be really happy with this allocation if the other manager screws up and does something wrong. So, and I don't like the inability to know, like, anytime I do anything, I want to be able to go back and determine later, was it effective or not, right? I make a trade and I know why I made the trade, and I can go back later and be like, oh, this trade worked out because I traded for stolen bases and my stolen bases improved and I got what I needed out of that. Or like, this trade didn't work out because this guy got hurt, but like, my process was still good. I still feel good about it. Like, guys get hurt, there's nothing I can do about it. If I'm cutting, if I'm allocating to get someone cut, I will never know if I did anything effective. Because when I go back and look, I'll be like, okay, either the guy didn't get cut, in which case, fine, that's just like any other allocation I would do. Or the guy did get cut, and I'm like, well, maybe I did something effective, or maybe I just wasted my money and I don't know. And it makes it impossible to therefore like learn from what you're doing, improve on what you're doing, and get better at it. And so I just avoid it.
No, that makes total sense. And I mean, you still can't evaluate it, but I guess the only way you feel okay in that situation is if you put dollars on a player, they got cut, and you got them at auction, and no matter what, you're like, I feel good about it. Whether I was the reason they dropped them or not, I did something, that player got cut. Like, I could maybe understand stretching it that way. Something I would suggest is just to hesitate doing that anyway, because if it's a player that you're targeting, I still think they might go for more expensive than what you're comfortable with. And this is an issue I'm having, and I think it's good, potentially something to think about for managers out there who are new to Otnew, is that after your initial auction, players are way more expensive at auction. And so I'm sitting here with a $60 Vlad Guerrero that I don't anticipate anybody putting arbitration dollars on. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. They could make my decision a lot easier if they put a lot of dollars on him. Either way, I spent $58 on him. That was clearly too much. He was not the number one first baseman. He wasn't even the number two first baseman. He had a fine season, but now I'm sitting here with a player who's $60. Now, my concern is that there might be some team out there that did extremely well and is going to have about $70 free at auction, and they're going to go into auction saying, I don't care what I come out with as long as I come out with Vlad Guerrero Jr. And now I've got the situation where, you know, and I guess I'm getting kind of away from arbitration here, but we can definitely tie it back. Where like, it's still a hard decision for me to cut. He may look like a cut. You may look at a player and think like, man, if I just add a couple dollars here, this is definitely a player that's a cut because he's estimated to be, you know, a $47 player and he's got him for 60. I'm going to make him 63 and he's definitely going to cut him. I still might not, because I still might be concerned that at auction, he's going to end up going for 65, 70, because that's the one piece a team out there needs to really strengthen their roster going into the season. So I'd be hesitant for that approach as well. I think it's easy to find at least one player on a team to add just $1 to who's at under market value and definitely going to be kept to get those dollars to stay.
Yeah. And I, again, for me at the end of the day, it really does come back to this idea that like, even if I win that player at auction, even if I get them back, like even if I cut, even if I force a cut or think I forced a cut, I still could have put those dollars on another player where that player wouldn't have been cut. And then that other team would have less money to spend at auction. Like, you're driving up auction prices when you do that, right? Because like across the league, I mean,
that's a good point.
Think about it this way. Across the entire league, there is $4,800 to be spent at auction, right? $400 per team. A lot of that money is eaten up by keepers. There are $300 in arbitration dollars. $300 in allocations that can be put out there. If everybody uses their allocations to force cuts, that is $300 additional dollars that are going to be spent at auction. And it's going to drive up inflation. It's going to make players more expensive. It's going to make it harder to get the guys you want to get. That's the extreme example, right? But that is true of every dollar, right? If you use 10 of your $25 to force cuts, that's 10 more dollars that other managers have to bid up the guys you want. And I'm just, yeah. And again, maybe then you're like, well, yeah, but I forced bets back into the auction, but like, he might have been there anyways. You have, and you don't know right. that. And you're, I don't know. I've had managers say, like, yeah, well, somebody told me that, like, oh, you really pushed him too far. It's like, even then, it's like, eh, Do I really believe them? Do I really think that they're telling you they pushed them too far? Do they even know, right? Like, because I don't know that most people, when they make a decision to cut a $49 Mookie Betts in January, can be like, oh, if he were 47, I would have kept him, and actually know for sure that had he been 47, that's what they would have done. Because it's hard to evaluate. And like, human beings are terrible at thinking that way. Like, we do a really bad job of knowing what we would have done in situations that didn't play out. And so I just think you can never tell if your dollar was completely wasted or if it pushed the guy back into auction. And if it pushed the guy back into auction, that still might not work out for you. So it's just right. It's not the approach.
Before we go to break, I want to reiterate another point that Chad made, is that, like, let's say it works out and you don't even know it, but you added $3 to a player and that caused the manager to drop them. That, yeah, you know, was the line in the sand they drew, and they said, all right, I'm going to cut them. Well, then those $3 only mattered for this one season, whereas you could have put them on a player that would make it carry over from season to season. I thought that was an apt point. That was another thing that was discussed in last year's episode with Mark McElroy. But before we continue with episode 79, not 80 of Keeper Cut, we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. Welcome back, folks. Pete Ball, Chad Young, Keeper Cut Podcast, breaking down arbitration in Atnu. And Chad, we had a few questions from listeners here, and looking at the first one, we basically just answered it. And that was from @VikaBot1. Should I just target people I want to target in the draft, or should I try to maximize cost of valuable players on other rosters? And I think it was a 2-0 vote there that we are maximizing the cost on the players that are going to be kept on for sure. Other rosters. We had two other interesting questions here I think we could spend some time on. One is from @HamiltonPorter. And again, thanks everybody for the questions. If you have other Atnu-related questions, arbitration questions, fire them our way towards the account and we will get to them. These are just the ones we're going to cover on the show. But @HamiltonPorter says, general strategy, do you wait until the last day? Do you give money to the highest priced players that they have to cut them and they are available at draft? I have no clue what I'm doing. Well, the second question is the ultimate question, right, that we've been breaking down. But Chad, give us your thoughts on waiting until the last day. Is that the right move?
I don't think it is. I don't think it's super important when you do it. I used to think it really mattered that you go in and do it early, because I thought there is value in signaling to other people what your intentions are and where you're going to, like, not signaling to the team you're allocating to, but to everyone else, right? It's like when I go in, and I mentioned before, I'm looking at Pete's team in the listener league, and there have been $5 placed on Christian Javier so far. That pushes his salary up to 12. Knowing that other managers are going to do that gives me some information about, like, okay, well, Javier is going to get pushed up to like 12, maybe $13, $14 before all is said and done. And so, like, even if I think a $7 Christian Javier is the best value on Pete's team, I may not want to put arbitration on him because I have good reason to believe he'll get up to $14, $15. And so, like, maybe I'd rather target his Tristan McKenzie, who's gotten a couple dollars, but not as much. Or maybe I want to go look at some of the less expensive players on his team. Someone like, sort of scrolling through, I don't know, someone like a Bryson Stott or a Juan Yepez. And we can talk a little bit more about some of these pre-breakout guys, but like, those are cheap players who are interesting. And I think you're probably going to keep, and if you're probably going to keep them and they're interesting and cheap, they could be targets. And so there is value in doing it early on in order to just signal to your league mates what you're going to do. I also think the other thing to keep in mind is you can edit your arbitration at any time during the process. And so while I don't wait till the last day to do it, I always, always go look at my teams on the last day. And the reason I do that is twofold. One is what I was just saying about Christian Javier, right? So, like, let's say I go in here and I'm like, oh, people already put $5 on Christian Javier, so I'm going to target some other players on Pete's team. And then over the next 2 weeks, people come in and they take dollars off of Christian Javier. I want to make sure I check back at the end. I'm like, oh, I thought Javier was going to get to $15. He's only at $9. I'm gonna move some of my dollars around and hit him harder. Or maybe I put my dollars on, you know, Jazz Chisholm, who you have at $10. He's up 12 now. Maybe I'm like, wow, I can't believe he's only being pushed to 12. He should be more like 18. I put $3 on him, and I come back later and everybody else has put $3 on him, and all of a sudden he's, you know, pushing 30 instead of pushing 20. And I'm like, oh, no. I don't think he needs to be $30. So I go back at the end just to take another look for that. The other is news breaks, right? Guys sign extensions or get traded or retire, right? And like, this is the Buster Posey example I mentioned earlier from League One, where somebody put a dollar on Buster Posey early on, which was a totally reasonable thing to do at that point, and then he retired. Like, just go back and check, because like, I don't know. I'm looking at your team, and there's probably not a great example for this. Maybe the best example is I go in, I put $3 on Christian Javier now, and you know, knock on wood, I'm not wishing anything bad on Christian Javier, but like, he's still playing. And so I put $3 on him now. And then, you know, game three of the World Series, he comes out and his velocity is down a couple ticks and he gets pulled after an inning and he gets removed for the roster due to injury. And we're waiting to hear if there's like Tommy John coming. I may not want to leave those $3 on Christian Javier in that case. And so, yeah, hopefully that isn't playing out. I'm not trying to put any bad juju out into the universe or anything like that. But like, those things do happen and you do want to be aware of those things. And so like, going back at the end, like, one of the reasons arbitration goes until mid-November is because it gets us past the World Series. And by the time you get to mid-November, like, yes, news will still come up throughout the off season, but you get all of those, like, you know, Jose Ramirez has already been announced. He's having surgery on his thumb and we'll be ready for spring, right? Like, you're going to get news like that coming in the next couple of weeks. By the time you get to mid-November, the World Series is over. Those teams have started to release, like, you'll know everything you're going to know other than some trades and signings or any new injuries that happen. And so that's sort of like, just go back in mid-November at the end and double check.
Yeah. So that doesn't sound like anything too specific to arbitration. I mean, obviously if people took dollars off of players and decided they wanted to put them elsewhere, that could impact your decisions, like you said. But otherwise, folks, it's just playing the news game, right? And taking advantage of the amount of time that you have before you have to make these decisions. And I can say for sure, you know, I think you and I will probably do a little bit of arbitration during this episode, and then certainly be checking back come November 13th and certainly up until that deadline of November 14th. So thanks for the question, Hamilton Porter. And last we got Leif Nelson, who's at Nordic Turtle. Would you arb a $2 Ellie De La Cruz or a $2 Jackson Chirillo if there were no obvious targets? And I'm going to start with this one, Chad, because when I started Otnew, I had a hard time with prospects because I couldn't get past this idea that like prospects must have so much value in Otnew because there's so many roster spots and they're so cheap and it's such a, you know, it's like dynasty. It just goes on forever. I don't know about you, Chad. I feel like I know you well enough that I think this would be your response. There has to be someone else on the roster to put arbitration dollars on than those two. There has to be. Even you could tell me they're both going to be up next season, I still think I'd be looking elsewhere to put my dollars there. First of all, they're not even $1 players. They're already paying $2 for them. Not that that makes that much of a difference, but it does. And there has to be, between the 38 other potential roster spots on this team, there has to be other players that it would hurt more. Granted, you know what? If Chirillo goes out and lights the world on fire, gets called up in August and just tears it up, carries Milwaukee to the playoffs, whatever it might be, well, you know what? I'll put $3 of arbitration on him next year. But I'm right. Not doing it now when he's this far from the major leagues.
Yeah, I actually think, like, I'm going to go a step further on that. It's like, it actually isn't just that far from the major leagues. In general, I don't want to put dollars on players who have to reach a new level of performance to justify those dollars, right? If it's a projection thing. And so, you know, I mentioned this article I'm working on looking at League One data from last year. There were six players who I considered, you know, not necessarily prospects, but required a breakout to justify arbitration. So these are all guys who, in my mind, when arbitration was assigned to them at this time last year, if someone had said over the next 12 months, they are going to repeat exactly what they've just done, they're going to be at the same level with the same numbers, will you feel good about this arbitration? The answer would have been an obvious no. Right. Everyone would be like, no, of course not. That's like, I'm putting this money on them because I think they're going to do more next year. Those six players were, so start with the two who I think this worked out okay. People put $4 on Bobby Witt Jr., and one person put $1 on Julio Rodriguez. Okay, those guys played well. Makes sense. Great. Other dollars went on Alex Kirilloff, Zach Veen, Tarek Skubal, and Josiah Gray. Now, Skubal's an interesting one because he did break out. He did pitch much better, but then he got hurt. And now, like, we don't really know what his timeline is. We don't know what's going on. He got pushed from $8 to $9. He's now $11. Like, is he going to be kept this year at $11? I don't know. I would think so, but let's see what the news is about him by January. Like, we're a ways off from that decision. The other guys here, like, Kirilloff did, you know, had a bad year and got hurt. Josiah Gray was not good. Veen had, like, you know, Veen, I think if you're putting $1 on Zach Veen last year, it's because you thought he might reach AAA or even the majors this year. Instead, he barely got to AA, and then he sucked in AA. Like, he was awful. And so, you know, his stock is down, if any, right? And so, like, and those are all, that's it. Those are all the guys who you were like, yeah, I mean, I think they could be great, but they need to prove something. And on top of that, like, one of the guys I said sort of, hey, this made sense, was Bobby Witt Jr. Bobby Witt Jr. got pushed from $8 to $12 in arbitration last year. He is at $14 now. Bobby Witt Jr. in a 4x4 league, I'm not sure how much more than $14 he's even worth. His on-base percentage was abysmal. He actually didn't have a very good slugging percentage, in part because his on-base percentage is abysmal. And, like, yeah, he hit 20 home runs. He had 82 runs. Those are good numbers in 4x4, but, like, they're not great, right? If he had gone 30 home runs and 100 runs with a low on base and a mediocre slugging, fine. But, like, he's hurting you. He's actively hurting you in two categories, and I'm not sure how much he's helping you in the other two. It's like, is he really worth a lot more than $14? I don't know. But that's sort of besides the point, because even if I think he's worth $20, you could have arbed him up from $10 this year to $20 without a problem. You didn't need to push him $4 last year. And same thing with J-Rod, right? The $1 on J-Rod last year, like, you could have just given that to him this year. He's still going to need to be pushed this year. And had he flopped, right? Had he been Jared Kelnick instead of Julio Rodriguez, then that dollar was wasted. And that's sort of what happened with Gray. And it's probably what happened with Kirilloff. And it's probably what happened with Veen. And on Skubal, like, I don't know. Again, I think he'll probably be kept. I don't think that $1 really hurts necessarily. But, like, I don't know. I think if you could have gone back and looked at that team, there's probably somebody else that would have been more useful. So, yeah, not only would I not put it, like, not only would I never consider Churio or Ellie De La Cruz for arbitration this year, I don't want to put arbitration on any player who hasn't already performed at a level to justify the arbitration. I'm not paying for projection. I'm paying for what I guess you should be careful about that. Like, you always want to pay for what you expect a player to do. But in this case, with such limited resources, and it's so important in my mind to get it right and have it stick long-term, I have no desire to put dollars on projection that isn't based on actual performance. So find me the guy who, like, you know, yes, you could make a case that last year J-Rod at $7 had $40 upside, and some other guy who was $3 and had $8 upside isn't as exciting. Don't care. Find the guy who's $3 with $8 upside who performed like an $8 player already, and make him $4, make him $5, make him $6, and eat up the surplus value on that guy. And if J-Rod breaks out, fine, hit him this year. But there, yeah, I do not like. You know, I'm trying to think of who the guys are this year, but it's like maybe the best example is a guy we talked about recently, Francisco Alvarez. I will not put arbitration on Francisco Alvarez. What do I expect from Alvarez? I think he's going to be the starting catcher for the Mets for most of the year next year, if not the whole year. And I think he's going to be really good. But he could be the NL Rookie of the Year, and he could be Jared Kelnick. And I don't know which one it's going to be, and I don't want to put arbitration dollars on him now. I'll do it next year. Or I won't, because he's terrible. Like, we'll have to see. But that, to me, is just stay away from those guys until you're confident they're going to be worth it.
No, that makes total sense to me. I was trying to think, like, what situation would I do this on? And I don't think there is. I think that's the short of it for me as well. I guess if there was a prospect who was rostered for some reason, and I'm looking at a team and I'm thinking I got to put a dollar on this team, and I think if I doubled this player's salary, well, that wouldn't be the case. If I make this player's salary go from $2 to $3, I think for sure this guy's going to be cut, which is, as we know, a tricky game to play. You'd never know if you'd be correct. And I think I'm going to be able to get him back in dollar days. And I think of a player like Nick York, who I was high on because I'm a super biased Red Sox fan, but also he was the youngest player like every game. Like, I don't think he played against a single pitcher that was younger than him. And if I see someone else has him for $2 and I say, you know what, I don't know who to put on this team, but if I know for a fact there's no way this manager would keep a $3 Nick York, make him $3, get him back for a dollar. Now I have this player that I really like, but there's no guarantee that works. Right. And he's still a prospect who hasn't proven anything. And in that case, he might not even reach the major leagues next year. So, you know, now you're keeping him for $2 next year. It just, now I'm talking myself out of this. And it was like the one extreme situation where I think it could work. So in short, ended long at Nordic Turtle, neither Chad or I would put dollars on those guys. There's got to be someone else on there, even if it's making, you know, some middle of the road pitcher go from $14 to $15. I think that's going to hit harder than hyping up the prices of these prospects.
I agree.
So, Chad, I thought it would be fun. And if you don't want to do this, you know, maybe we don't need to. But if you and I did each other's arbitration right now, you up for that challenge?
Yeah, sure. Why not? You want to do this in the listener league, not in league 13. Okay.
Yeah. In the listener league.
Cause we're in a couple league 13, leagues together.
That's true. So the listener league, I figure, you know, most of these people will be listening. Chad is St. Anne's Steamers. My team is the originally named Pete's team. And I'll start us off, Chad, cause I've already got it up and I was looking at your roster and I feel like I know the guys that you like well and don't like and so on and so forth. And one name that I'm looking at that I'm going to put some dollars on, multiple, is Nestor Cortes, who you've got here for $6. Now, he's already had money added on to him. He's already been hit. And maybe I'd back off in that case, right? Because Nestor Cortes, kind of a late random breakout. And, you know, he's a little gimmicky for me. And people take that term negatively. I don't think there's anything wrong with being gimmicky as long as it works. And for Nestor, it's worked all the way through the playoffs. But his home runs per nine, which for me is like this forgotten about category, is under one. So Nestor is a guy I'm going to throw $2 on. And that last dollar is going to hurt because it's going to go to a Chad Young favorite in Willy Adames, who maybe to some looked like he disappointed, but he really came on strong down the stretch. And I think he is easily worth even the $19 that he's going to be at after I add this dollar on. So those are my $3 for Chad for St. Anne's Steamers, $1 on Willy Adames and $2 on Nestor Cortes. Chad, any reaction to the arbitration that I just locked in for you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have like mixed feelings on Cortes's year, but I don't know why. Like there's something about him that like feels, I don't know if it's because he's gimmicky. I don't know if it's something else that I feel like, is he really going to repeat that? But like,
no,
he's good. I mean, but things, he doesn't have to repeat it. And that's the big thing. I haven't, what do you say? $6. Like he could be significantly worse than he was this year and still be worth $15 to $20. Right. And so from that perspective, it makes sense to put money on him. Adames is an interesting one in 4x4 because he doesn't necessarily help in on base, but I'm sort of with you. I think his year this year in some ways got, I don't know, lost. I don't know if lost is the right word, but like he, you know, he only had a 298 on base. He had a 458 slugging. So he's helping in slugging. He hit 31 home runs. So he's helping a lot in home runs. And I think that his on base percentage comes back up next year, right? Like he had a 278 BAPIP, which is 30 points below his career total. Sorry, it's more than 30 points. It's almost 50 points below his career total. It is 30 points below his postseason total, which is that's what's showing up on FanGraphs right now. But his career BAPIP is 325. It was 278 this year. coming into this season, his BABIP for his career was 342. So if you wanted to tell me that next year his BABIP is going to be like 315 to 320, maybe even as high as 330 instead of the 278, like, yeah, that sounds about right. And other than that, like, everything else looks sort of like what he does. And so, you know, 330, a 330 on base with a 480 slugging and 30 plus home runs again, like, yeah. And with that higher on base, he'll score more runs as well. So I think he's being slept on a little bit and he's quite good. So
I have a theory as to why he's being slept on, because I think you're right. I think a lot of guys that get hyped up a little bit much because they have so much extreme success in a short period of time, and people in their heads just extrapolate that and assume that that's what it's going to be going forward. But Willie Adames actually didn't have some crazy end to the season. Here are his home runs by month: 5 in April, 4 in May, 6 in June, 5 in July, 6 in August, 5 in September, and then none in October, but that was just in 20 plate appearances. I think he was just like the average, you know, from month to month jumped up and down, but he was just pretty much consistently essentially exactly what we expected and hoped throughout the season, with maybe a little bit too low of an average that, like you said, you can kind of chalk up to some bad BABIP luck. So I think he's kind of a sneaky target in arbitration where it's like there's not a lot of hype going into the player, but he's still easily keepable at that price.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. I'm a little annoyed you're putting money there, but so be it. So let me take a look at your roster. And I already mentioned, like, people have put some money on Christian Javier. Looking at some of the guys on your team who stand out as good values. And so sort of my process here, for those who haven't done this before, there's a few things I do. The first thing I'm basically doing is I'm looking at players who I think have surplus, right? Or are underpriced, that their value is above their salary. And so I actually, like, one of the first things I'll do when I look at a team is I will click on the original salary column or the new salary. I think the new salary, yeah, or the new salary column, either one. There's columns for both their salary before arbitration and including arbitration. But I sort from smallest to largest. And I scroll through and look from the cheapest players to see where there might be like good, interesting values. And doing that with your team, actually, like the bottom of your team, there's some interesting stuff there. But like, you know, we talked about prospects. So I'm not hitting your, you know, Emerson Hancock, Jonathan Hernandez, Lou Trevino, Brusdar Graterol. Like, I'm not going to hit relievers in, no matter how cheap they are in 4x4. They're not difference makers in my mind. Oswald Peraza is interesting. Cutter Crawford, no. Luis Renjifo, actually, like, he had a really strong end of the year, and maybe I should think about him. Maybe. I mean, you have him for $3, and that's probably about right, although there's some upside in that, perhaps. Ahmed Rosario, not great in OBP leagues. Like, he's more of a, you know, average. And 5x5, I'd feel differently about Rosario, but not this format. Jorge Lopez, we're back into relievers. DL Hall, we're back into prospects and so on. Like, I mentioned a couple names I mentioned before, Juan Yepes and Bryson Stott. To me, those guys, like, they're super interesting. They both fall into that, like, Kirilloff, Witt, J-Rod, Bucket we talked about before, of guys who, like, I think they could both be worth $10+ next year, but they certainly haven't shown it yet. And I don't want to put money on them for that reason. Then I get down to your $5 Adolis Garcia. And sorry. Garcia, I mean, he's another interesting one. Like, he is a low on base guy, and he is just a low on base guy. And I think he's always going to be a low on base guy. But when you need five outfielders, that depth matters. And he had 27 home runs and 88 RBIs and put up a good slugging percentage. And, like, honestly, I think the thing with Garcia that I think is interesting is I think he is probably a, let's call him a $10 to $12 outfielder already. And it wouldn't take a ton for that on-base percentage to jump 15 to 20 points and move him up a tier. So I'm going to put at least $1 on him. I'll start by putting $1 there. Dre Jameson, I really like, but he's another guy who's like, he hasn't really proven it yet. We talked about Tarik Skubal before and Josiah Gray before. Guys who like, I like the upside. Skubal at $7. I could see pushing him to $8, but I probably won't just because I'm waiting to hear what's going on with this injury. Okay, now we get into sort of the meat of your roster. We get up to like the $8, $9 range, and Tony Gonsolin at $9. Tristan McKenzie, who's now up to $10. He was at $8, but he's already gotten a couple of dollars of arbitration, and those feel like guys who deserve some dollars thrown at them. And so I'm probably going to put another $1 on Gonsolin. I'm not going to touch McKenzie because I already got a couple bucks. You got Jazz. You got your $10 Jazz has been pushed to $12. How do I feel about it? I go so back and forth on Jazz, as you know. Man. On the one hand, like, I don't think there's any chance you would cut him if I pushed him to 13. On the other, I don't know that I really need to. Oh, and then there's that Christian Javier. He's got $5 on him already. That pushed him to 12. Tyler Molly, Tanner Houck. You got a $13 Dalton Varsho has been pushed to 15. I don't think I need to push him further than that. Giolito, Ketel Marte, Eloy Jimenez. Then you've got this $33 Corey Seager who's been pushed to 34. And I think I might go after Seager because, like, he's probably a $35-ish dollar shortstop. But then when you add in inflation and, like, figure that his third, let's say he's a $30 player either, even with like $20% inflation, 30% inflation, he gets pushes up to 35 plus, and he's still only making, let's see, 34. So I'll push him to 35. So that's what I'm gonna do with my $3. One on Seager, one on Gonsolin, one on Adolis Garcia. There we go. Nudge them all up a buck.
I think they all, but
what are your reactions to that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised Gonsolin hadn't gotten touched yet. It's amazing how much his value went down after his injury. I mean, the way that people were talking about Gonsolin, I listen to Fantasy Baseball Today. It feels like I bring it up every episode, and they were talking about him as like a top 15 starter, top 20 starter at the worst. And that's not me firing shots at them. I listened to their words, and I was like, man, Tony Gonsolin, huh? And then he went down with injury, and in this pitcherless mock draft, I want to pull that up because I want to see where he went. I'm not going to be able to see, I'm not going to take the time to see what numbered pitcher he was coming off the board. But Gonsolin got drafted in the 11th round of a 12-team league, and names that went ahead of him were like Chris Bassett, Logan Gilbert, Lance Lynn, just names that I wouldn't have expected would be even in the conversation before Gonsolin got hurt. So I was surprised to see he hadn't had any dollars put on him, and obviously I shouldn't have got excited because he deserved it. Adolis Garcia was definitely one of my better pickups, so it totally makes sense. I totally get the dollar on him, even though he hurts me in slugging. I mean, on base percentage.
On base, yeah.
Yeah, he still helps everywhere else. And then, yeah, Seager. If you remember, I traded you Manny Machado. I clearly wasn't going to win the league, and Machado was one of my massive contracts, and I sent him to you back when Miguel Vargas had a lot more hype. Not that I'm out on Miguel Vargas by any stretch of the imagination. And it was basically, I was choosing between Seager and Machado. I was thinking, like, next year I'm going to hold on to one of these guys. So what can I get for either of them? And obviously that was the trade that came to fruition. So I do want to keep Corey Seager. So I'd be interested to see what happens to him as arbitration continues.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've got to go through and look at all the other teams and figure out, you know, that might result in me moving some dollars around, but I think those three guys are, I feel good about those targets for now.
Yeah, definitely good choices. So, Chad, one more time, if you want to talk about that article and folks have an idea of when it's coming out, it might be two articles now. Anything you want to share with the good people?
My guess is the first piece will come out on Tuesday and the second piece on Wednesday or Thursday. I'm also, it'll be over at Fangraphs. I'm also working. I posted last week an article on starting pitcher arbitration targets. Guys that I think based on their average salary across lots of leagues might get targeted. I'm going to try to go through each position. It'll just be a few names, but some names. And I think to me, like, the way I would use that is not like, oh, Chad said this guy's a target, I should go find him and put dollars on him, because different players have different prices in different leagues and they won't always be the same. but it'll give you a sense of like the types of players I'm interested in, the way I'm thinking about things, guys who, if they're inexpensive, might be good targets. So, you know, you can use those. I don't know what position I'll do this week. It'll just be a surprise. But if you follow me on Twitter at Chad Young, I'll try to remember to tweet out my stuff. But yeah, keep an eye out for that stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, so be on the lookout for all those articles, guys, and follow Chad at Chad Young so you have it hot off the press. Follow the show at Keeper Cut. Continue to send us questions, even if they're about arbitration. Just because we've recorded our episode doesn't mean that we won't get back to you. And you can follow me for some Celtics thoughts over the next couple of months at Pete B. Baseball. Folks, thanks for listening to episode 79, and we will see you in a couple of weeks.